Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week on the programme, our experts preview the Football World Cup, which kicks off, of course, in Moscow on the 14th of June, with the help of a new UBS report exploring the intersection of good investment practice and the beautiful game. Whether it's similarities between best practice in the sport and investing, or what the event could mean in terms of economics and finance for host nation Russia going forward, or, and perhaps most importantly, who's going to win, our panel has the World Cup covered. Thanks to one of the report's authors, one of our regular Bulletin panellists, and Monocle 24's own Russia experts, we'll consider both the investment implications and the footballing fundamentals of June's global sporting jamboree. We start with our friend Themis Themistocleous, head of the European Investment Office at UBS Wealth Management. Themis, let's talk a bit about the overlay of football and investment. There are some themes that are relevant across both these worlds, I guess. Things like agility, teamwork, calm under pressure. It's quite striking, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's clearly lessons we can learn from football, amongst other things. If you think about when you play football, a lot has to do about agility, balance, calm, and also teamwork. Starting with agility, you go into a game, you don't know how the game is going to develop, right? So you always need to be on your toes and change your game strategy depending on what the opponent is doing. So you need to really be agile, which is not different to the market. The markets day to day change, and you need to be prepared for whatever the market throws at you. The other one is about balance. To have a successful team, you have to have strong players across the field. It's not just one player, although one player can swing the match sometimes. But in the long term, if you look at the most successful teams, they are the ones that have strong players across the field. And it's the same with a portfolio. When you invest, you have to have a balanced portfolio. So that gives you the ability to perform well over the long term. And the last one is about calm and being disciplined. And I think one of the biggest problems with investing is when people become emotional and they invest based on their biases and based on their emotions. But in football, obviously, if you let your emotions carry you away, then you will lose the match because at the critical moments, you most probably, the striker either won't get that goal or the defenders, which is actually more interesting, they lose concentration towards the end of the match. And it's amazing how many times we've seen matches being lost because of that lost in concentration where the opposition scores on the 90th minute. So the same with investing. You need to stay calm. You need to have a plan and stick to that plan right through investing rather than become emotional and respond to whatever emotions prevail at the time.
Tilman Kolb is an analyst in the emerging markets team in the Chief Investment Office with a focus on EM macroeconomics and FX, and he wrote large parts of the report. Tilman, of course, there are so many dynamics in football that echo in investing and vice versa, as Themis has been saying. It's exciting times generally, isn't it?
Of course, we were happy to do this report about the World Cup and that we could join it with what we usually do in our daily lives at investment strategists. Given that the World Cup is happening in Russia, the third emerging market country to host in a row after South Africa and Brazil, this is closely aligned with what we usually look at in our daily work. The possibility to use the models or parts of the models that we use to analyze markets is also nice to transfer to football and have a little bit of fun with it as well.
Absolutely. And Tilman, maybe you can speak to us a bit more about the methodology then. How much overlay is there if you look at an event like the World Cup? And obviously there's some very explicitly financial and economic considerations when looking at Russia more broadly, but towards the football and the World Cup, it seems from the report that actually there are methodological overlays between the day-to-day work you do and this. I mean, can you use the same kinds of rules to look at both?
So in our daily work, we have to work with a lot of data. With regards to football, there also exists data from the past. We have tournaments that were played by lots of different nations, lots of different teams. We had seen the qualifiers. We know that certain teams have an advantage when they play at home. All of this data, this quantitative aspect, is something that we can use to feed a model with it. We also use similar models in our investment work. Of course, they are a little bit more advanced than what we did here with the World Cup. But in general, just having the ability to, especially perhaps with regards to football, get out the emotion and look at the hard data without any preferences we might have on a personal level is a good way to try to get a little bit more of an objective measure of who might win the World Cup.
Can we talk next, Tilman, briefly about the More Than Goals and Feelings section of the report, which you authored? What are the challenges in understanding and quantifying, I suppose, things like mass participation, goodwill, collective support?
It is indeed quite difficult to see what exactly the effect of such a big event is, given that it is not just happening in an empty space. So while the event is happening, a lot of other things are also happening. I mean, usual classifications speak about the spending of tourists in the country, about infrastructure that is built and can be reused and makes the country and destinations more attractive for future tourists, and the ability to present itself as a country to the world and attract interest in the country. Of course, the benefits have always to be weighed against the costs of hosting such an event. In general, if we think about what an event might mean structurally for a country who hosts, a lot of the spending, of course, goes into stadiums and into preparation of the event itself. While we are still in an emerging market context, and in an emerging market context, there are, of course, a lot of structural issues that could also be tried to be solved with money. So in our view, if it just is about the pure economics, spending money not on a World Cup might perhaps be a good idea. But of course, you should not discount the non-economic benefits you might get from the World Cup.
Coming back to you, Themistocleus, there's an interesting section about investing in Russia. Now, and we've talked before about this on this forum, haven't we, Themis? Reform remains the key word, I guess.
There's still a lot that can be done to make the economy more flexible. Still, the state plays quite a big role in the economy that can be changed. So there's a number of opportunities there in terms of the reform. One area that, though, we have to give them credit for is their very orthodox monetary policy, at least, and to some degree fiscal policy. It's interesting when you look at debt to GDP, Russia versus a lot of other countries, less than 20%, right? And the central bank has been very, very disciplined and kept the targeting of inflation and everything else. So they have done some things, but clearly there's plenty of more for opportunity on the reform side.
Let's reflect in more detail next on some of the backdrop to the tournament that both Themis and Tilman have been talking about. Mary Dajewski is a columnist and Monocle 24 regular analyst on Russia, who worked as a foreign correspondent in Moscow for a number of years. Mary, the awarding of the World Cup to Russia was itself controversial. I wonder, how do you think Vladimir Putin, for example, will seek to use the tournament? And I wonder, is there a domestic appetite to have it not as some great PR coup, as this soft power play, but simply as the celebration that FIFA and many others would like it to be?
Putin will obviously want to use it, but I think less now that I think it's generally recognised he thinks he's going into his last term as president, that he'll see it almost less as a personal thing than as sort of putting Russia on the map in what he hopes will be a positive way. And I think that's how probably a lot of people across Russia will see it, because this is a sort of unique thing. It's not like the Winter Olympics, which were based in Sochi, which is very difficult for people to get to who weren't involved in it. They'd be watching it on television. This is something that crosses the whole of Russia. You know, the England team, for instance, will be playing in Kaliningrad, right in the west, and it will be playing in Volgograd, which is quite sort of towards the south and not exactly in the east. But it's going to cover a lot of territory, and it's going to involve a lot of Russians at first hand. And I think that makes it quite a different sort of quality of thing.
What if the message, the global message, I suppose also on that sort of economic front, this idea of Russia being open for business, not a zone that's completely hamstrung by corruption and all the rest. Do you think there's a chance for Putin, or maybe more broadly for the country, to broadcast to the world, look, you know, this is a place that requires and will support foreign direct investment? Will that narrative be there? You can see that naturally Putin and others would want it to be. How will that fare over the month?
I mean, I'm absolutely sure that you're right, that Putin and others, the government as a whole, will want that message to come across. And it is really a unique opportunity because the amount of investment, foreign investment, that there is outside traditional centres and outside traditional sectors of investment, for instance, you know, oil and gas and up in particular parts of Siberia and the Urals, there is huge potential still, I would say, for infrastructure development. And when you heard Putin in his State of the Nation speech, and when he at his inauguration, where the speeches were actually quite similar in tone and in intention, you know, Putin is talking about wanting to develop Russia. The interesting thing to me is that, you know, you often hear Russians, and actually less Putin, but, you know, quite often senior Russians, talking in quite defensive terms, as though Russia is sort of, if not top of the tree, then, you know, it's made huge progress and it's doing absolutely fine. What you heard from those two speeches from Putin was that Russia actually has a long way to go still to catch up with, as it were, modern progressive economy in terms of its infrastructure, in terms of facilities for people, in terms of health and education. And it's that emphasis on domestic policy and domestic investment and determination, as it were, to bring Russia up in the world, that I think that is something that will be seen as a possible opportunity to show Russia, but also to show the potential and its actual need for outside investment.
Mary Dajewski. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll ask perhaps the critical question of the week. Who's going to win? Stephen Dalziel is a top Russia analyst and another regular Monocle 24 contributor. Stephen, as a seasoned watcher, not just of football, but of this vast country and its many complexities, can you give us some background on the culture of football, of fandom there, of domestic law and order policy, indeed, within Russia?
The roots are, well, they thought they were, you know, they, the English fans, thought they were the toughest. We can show them that they're not. And we've seen that not just in Russia. We've seen it in Germany. We've seen it in other countries where England have played and where England, to be honest, have been let down by their fans on a number of occasions by a small minority of fans. But, you know, you can have 99 football fans walk past a shop window peacefully and the 100th walk past and throws a brick. What have you got? You've got a broken shop window. And so we've had incidents like that, and the English fans haven't covered themselves in glory. But now, of course, I'm sure this is coming into the police's reckoning as well, with relations between England and Russia, certainly at their lowest point since the breakup of the Soviet Union, and indeed for some years before that, and because of the Skripal affair as well this year, where not just England, but a number of countries around the world did blame the Russians for that and took diplomatic actions against Russia for that. Russia is feeling aggrieved. Russia is feeling that the world has a hate on it thinks. At least that's the image portrayed to its people, which is not actually the case. But Russia has been told it can't go on behaving the way it has done politically. But this is all playing into the mix. So those going to fans, particularly England fans, but any fans going to the World Cup, and particularly those whose countries are playing in some of the provincial cities, I think have to be very, very careful. Also, Russian police tend to hit first and ask questions later. One of the differences between British society and Russian society, and I've had Russians agree with me when I've said this to them, is that in Britain, if you see a policeman, you tend to feel reassured. In Russia, if you see a policeman, you tend to feel on your guard and wary, because the police don't have a great reputation for, shall we say, engaging in discussion before they take action.
Finally, on the programme, if we can return to you, Themistocleus, let's talk about the World Cup itself. It's always exciting. It's emotional. Can I ask, on a personal level, how excited are you? And, of course, who do you think's going to win?
It's that's the fun part of the report, right? And based on our simulations and analysis, we still think Germany most probably has the highest probability. But it's interesting, if we think Germany, Brazil and Spain combined probability is somewhere around 60%, so pretty high probability one of these three teams will win, with Germany still, from the way we look at it and analyze it, we still think Germany has the highest probability. And then beyond that, you have a very sharp drop in the probability. Fourth comes England. And I have to say, when we run the models and the result came up, clearly I live in the UK. So I said to the team, can we rerun the results, please? Because that looks a bit strange. England is the one country that always has a lot of promise, but not often delivered. But to put it in perspective, we think Spain has 16% probability of winning. England is about half that probability. And then you've got England, France and Belgium very close. But again, a world of caution, of course, like investing, nothing is certain until you get the result. And again, being Greek, we'll remind everybody back 2004, the European Cup, where Greece won against all odds. So again, we cannot say for sure. There's always the probability of an upset or a surprise.
Who'd have guessed you'd bring that Greek triumph up, Themis? Now, getting down likewise to that critical question, but asking you, Tilman Kolb, it's one I hope not rendered superfluous by your German nationality, and that is, who's going to win? What does the Kolb radar tell us?
The Tilman Kolb radar is, let's say, the USCIO model radar. It tells us that Germany will win with a likelihood of 24%, but Brazil and Spain are close up with likelihoods close to 20% for Brazil and Spain, around 60%. Of course, what you always have to keep in mind with these models is that this is based on historic data, right? So teams have changed over time, and we don't account for momentum that a team might build during the tournament. And of course, in sports, upsets can happen, surprises can happen. As in investing, past performance is no guarantee for future results.
If there is to be a surprise, though, Tilman, who might it be? I guess it couldn't be England, could it?
England, we have as actually the fourth with 8.5%. If I would personally be speaking, going away from my nationality as a German, I would actually be happy to see perhaps a smaller emerging market country take away the trophy, just because I think they would earn it as a boost.
And that's Themis Themistocleous, bringing us to the end of this 189th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.